Okay, well, let's get going. There's still a few people in line, I just noticed, but we're doing Psalm 23. Is that correct? Is that what was announced? Are we all on the same page? I believe this must be in anticipation of annual Good Shepherd Sunday. And since the Old Testament lessons have disappeared in the book of Acts after Easter, it's sometimes a chance to do a few of these Psalms. And 23 is always a good one to do. It's one of those texts that sort of suffers from overexposure. You know already what it says and what you think it says, so attention to the text is sometimes quite revealing. Well, let's dive right in. Mizmor lit dawiz, your basic standard superscription, Mizmor. Zamar seems to be the word for sing, so Mizmor is a word for song. It's not the word, technically, that heads the book of Psalms. That's a tehillah, or in the plural, a tehillim, which you'll see that at the top of the page, which is really from the verb halal, to praise. So Psalms in Hebrew are really praise, praise music? Can we say that? Praise songs? But the more technical term for each individual item along the way is mizmor, a song. And there's kind of a whole literature on the typology of this stuff to try to figure out, you know, what's the difference between a mizmor and a tehillah or whatever. And it usually sort of ends at saying all it can say and not solve all the riddles. Likewise, L'dawith, there's a whole literature to this. I don't mean to get lost on this. This is kind of a quick review of basic isagogics on Psalms. But the Psalms, L'dawith, is the lamed, grammatically the lamed of authorship, that is, which David wrote, with reference to David, or is it a dedicatory lamed, a mizmor dedicated to David? Or is it more of just sort of a referential, or I shouldn't say referential, but sort of in the style of David, that is to say Davidic style, all of which could be defended to some degree grammatically, and at least you got to be aware of the different arguments. You have a comment? This is the lamed of ambiguity, obviously, in some ways, the simplest way to take this is the lamed of possession, a psalm belonging to David, which would, I think, naturally imply authorship, but not necessarily. Others could have written it for him or in dedication to him. In any case, that's hardly the most important issue here. Let's get into the psalm itself. Remembering, however, that the superscriptions are really distinct from the psalm proper, even though verse 1 in Hebrew starts with mizmor. I think in most English translations they've sort of cleaned that up. The superscription does stand over and above or apart from the text itself. Yahweh ro'i. Well, this is easy enough because you know what it says, right? What's ro'i? Ro'i is really the participle of a verb ra'ah. If you're doing a biblical readings, and we just did this yesterday, got into Exodus 3, where it says Moses was shepherding, that's the same verb, and it's the same participle. English doesn't have a verb to shepherd, which it could stand, frankly. But the participle here is almost used nominally. A guy who acts as shepherd could be called simply a shepherd. The participle becomes the noun. It's a third hey root, so when you add a pronominal suffix, the third hey is long gone. The E at the end is my shepherding guy. That's what it really says. Yahweh is my one who shepherds. Now, objective or subjective genitive. If anything, the point of the psalm is that we're the sheep, he's the shepherd, so it's the one. Yahweh is the one who shepherds me. You could actually translate it that way. Though my shepherd is fine. Lo echsar, I will not chasar. Chasar, kal imperfect. It's actually a fairly simple form. You'll notice that, hey, here's a good little trivia piece. Though name the vowel in the second syllable, achsar. That's not a comet's, I don't think. It should be a comet's katuf, because you need an O vowel there. Ach, nah, I'd have to double check that. Nah, it's accented. I shouldn't have brought it up. Like I said, it's a good trivia question for another day. The root is kasar, to want or lack something. I will not, lack is probably better than want, in all honesty. I think people say, I will not want, and then they're going around saying, yeah, but I still want stuff. See, it's not so much in the sense of desire as in the sense of you've got what you need. You won't lack anything. Now, you can still want stuff, but that's not really the point here. I'm not lacking in anything. I've got all I really need. Verse 2, or line 2, the verses here are a little artificial in the poetry. Be ne'oth desha, in pastures, a nawa is a pasture, it's plural, in pastures of desha, green stuff. All right, desha really means sort of what you see right this season. You know how you look out and everything just looks so fresh and green, huh? Or you see just a hillside with all of new grass coming in the spring. That's kind of the greens of earth. And of course, in the Middle East, this is relatively rare. Pastures are not particularly green. You generally herd your sheep around just trying to find a tuft here and a tuft there, and it's a tough job. In pastures of green stuff, he will ravatz me. Okay, do you parse that? See that as hifil, imperfect, with a pronominal suffix. He will cause me to ravatz. All right, ravatz means to lie down like animals do out in the field. It's really a picture of peace, all right? This is kind of the animals lying out there like contented cows or sheep, chewing whatever it is they chew, just kind of without a care in the world, all right? So in pastures of green, he causes me to lie down like animals do. Al mei minuchoth, upon, mei is the construct of mayim, waters of, minuchoth. Oh, this is a kind of a loaded word. It's from the noun minucha, which is from the verb nuach, to rest. Minucha means resting place, or even just rest itself. So you could translate this, upon waters of rest, or restfulness, he will nahal me. He will lead me. Nahal really means it's one of these words for guide, direct, kind of send in the right direction. He leads me. I'm always intrigued by this waters of rest stuff, because minucha is really a loaded theological word here. It's the same word you get at the end of Psalm 95, the Venite, and where you know, that psalm takes a left turn after we break off. The Venite stops two-thirds of the way through, and then it goes on about how bad they were when they rebelled against me at Massa and Meribah, and it ends with, they shall never enter my minucha, my rest. So that rest becomes almost theologically synonymous with promised land equals salvation. All right? Now, how much of that you want to sort of load into this phrase, I don't know. Right? But there is this waters of rest that is certainly theologically more than just, you know, stopping by the brook on a hot day. And I guess that's kind of one of my pet peeves in preaching on a psalm like this, that you get all these beautiful images but never really get beyond a very superficial understanding of them, when in fact there's some sort of rich and loaded theological concepts here. That waters of rest are rest because they provide salvation. Now, to sheep, I guess, I'm not a professional shepherd, but you can't really expect the sheep to drink from a fast-rushing brook, so that you have to kind of find a quiet pond for them to do this at leisure. And that may be behind the metaphor. In any case, on waters of rest he leads me. Navshi yishovei. My nephesh, he shuves in the polel. Now, this is the hollow root shuv that you probably know. And remember that there are these substitute conjugations for the D system, for the pl, pual, and hithpael, with verbs that don't have a middle root letter, which makes it extremely difficult to double a middle root letter. So they double the last root letter, and you get these so-called polale forms. Polale, polal, and hith polale. And it's simply the same intensity of the D stem applied to a hollow root. So my, how you want to translate this, my nephesh, he usually shuv in the PL or the D stem means something like revive, restore, cause to come back. Doesn't mean necessarily dead and brought back to life, but revived in a more general way, even as we sort of take the nesty plunge on a hot day. My nephesh here, again, nephesh means my being, my vitality. I would favor that nuance more than my soul, because that really isn't the Hebrew thinking, to distinguish soul from body that way. Myself, my being, he restores. Let's go on. He nakaz me, another hifil of a irregular and not familiar word. Naka means to lead. It's hifil, the third hey is gone, plus you have an object suffix. So he leads me in magle tzedek. A magle is really a rut. That's the best word for this. And it works well. These are ruts of righteousness, right? Rut. Path is okay, but remember, this is kind of a well-worn, a narrow path, probably worn by wheels as much as by feet. In ruts of righteousness, ruts. No, oh, not you. Root for what? How do you spell a word? That's not what this is. This is R-U-T, a rut or a narrow path. You can go with paths. That's fine too. A paths of righteousness. See here again. You sort of the metaphor is slipped theological, right? This isn't just restful waters, but these are our paths of righteousness. Now, what does that have to do with real-life sheep, see? He kind of betrays his hand that there's more here than just sheep language. In righteous ruts, or ruts of righteousness, he leads me, lema'an shemo, because of, for the sake of, shemo, his name. That's what's driving this, his name. And now we sort of get our theology correctly oriented because it has to do with who God is and how we know him. And you can probably load in all the name theology you want at this point for the sake of his name. It's not that we're such great sheep. You know, again, that's good. It gets it right on what's going on here. 4, gam, even, also. When, key can mean when here, or even if, but I think when is probably best. When a lake, finally a form you ought to know if you don't recognize. This is simply kalim perfect of halak, which acts like a first yod even though it's not. The saray tips you off to first yod. Walk, I perambulate, even when I walk. Begay, a gay is a steep valley. Probably ravine would be a better word than valley, okay? You can have broad valleys, medium valleys, and narrow valleys. This is a fairly narrow one. Even though I walk in the ravine of Tsalmaweth, of deep darkness. Now here's an interesting and debated word. The old translation, shadow of death, was based on the assumption that this is a compound word from Tsal, that means shadow, and maweth, which means death. This is because the grammars were being written by Germans, who have a language that makes compound words, like kindergarten, all right? So they thought, hey, when they discovered other cognate languages, other ancient Near Eastern languages, they discovered that in other languages, this maweth is actually a formal ending. That's an intensifying ending. We have certain endings that do things too. The one that comes to my mind is the ending E-T-T-E, which is a diminutive ending. It makes whatever you are talking about smaller, like a cigarette, or a kitchenette, or a sermonette, all right? Well, it's the same sort of thing, except it doesn't make it's not diminutive, it actually intensifies it. So what this means is not the valley of the shadow of death, but a deep, deep, dark valley, a valley of deep darkness. Now, before you start, making this sort of exegetical, philological insight and importing it into every funeral sermon you're about to preach on Psalm 23, because the people like this line at funerals, I would argue that it's still very appropriate, because if you want to talk about the deepest, darkest shadow that most people face in life, you'd probably end up with death anyway. So I think that's still quite appropriate as an application of this text, but it really doesn't say valley of death, all right? I will walk in the ravine of deep darkness. Lo, e, ra, ra. I will not, yahweh, ra. You can actually translate this one. I will not fear evil. Ki, ata, imadi. Suddenly pronouns jump up at us. You are imadi with me. This is im plus the pronominal suffix me, with me, your shevet and your mishanah, hema, they will nacham me. All right, the verb at the end is a difficult form, yinachamu ni. It's pl. You see at least the schwan of the imperfect prefix. You don't have a dagesh in the middle root letter because it's a guttural chayth. The verb is nakam. Nakam in the PL means comfort. The u is the plural ending, but it's gone defective. So you don't have the wow. It's nicha, yinachmu, and then you got the object suffix ni at the end. So it says, they will comfort me, which is what we thought it meant anyway. The hema is again, emphatic pronoun. Your rod and your staff, they will comfort me. A rod is a stick, a staff is really the crook, and it's often pointed out, and I don't know if this is overinterpreting, that the shepherd's essential piece of equipment has both a sort of an offensive and a defensive end to it. All right, that the stick end is to hit wolves over the head, or at least fend them off, like a club, and the crook end of it is to rescue sheep. All right, that's the whole idea of the crook. All right, the sheep's hanging on the edge of the cliff or going off on the way, and you kind of lasso them in with that thing and pull them in. I don't know. Yeah, you could probably make something out of that if you want. Here's where homilies tend to go flying off into allegory pretty quickly. Your rod and your staff, they comfort me. At this point, however, the whole he's the shepherd, we're the sheep image disappears. And suddenly, we're sitting around a meal table, which is not what shepherds ordinarily did with their sheep. So again, you sort of realize that this whole thing is metaphorical. Because now, verse 5, you a rock. A rock means to get things in the right order and is used for the same idiom we have in set a table. All right, you set things on the table. You don't set the table. The table's usually already there. But it's the same idiom. You set before me a shulchan, it means table. Neged tzorri, neged means in the presence of, over and against, opposite my enemies, adversary might be a little better word of tzorar, of my guys who are against me, which is an awfully strange place to set up a picnic. All right? And has this sort of, it's almost like there's a force field going on here, that they're out there in the middle of the enemies, and they're safe. It's all a little bit of in your face, almost. Yeah, you can't get me here. Dishan Bashemen Roshi. Now, I spent a little time, because Dishan is not the normal word for anoint. Isn't this always translated, you anoint my head with oil, my cup runneth over, or whatever. The normal word for anoint is Mashach, as in Mashiach. And the Shan really describes the smeary, in Wisconsin we say shmiri, ashes that are left at the bottom of the sacrifice pit. And it's describing something usually dirty and ashy-like, but oily. It's got all the fat, kind of like the the only thing we'd have is the bottom of the barbecue pit. See? Bottom of the Weber grill. That's pretty much what this is. So I'm not convinced this has anything to do with anointing my head with oil. I don't know what it means, however. You make real messy with greasy ashes. Now, Shemen is oil, with Shemen my head. I don't know what this is. I think it may well be describing kind of what you look like after you've eaten the barbecued chicken. See? Or probably not chicken, but eating the ribs. There you go. See? But not pork ribs. Yeah. Good point. Good point. We're not talking about barbecue sauce here, but it's kind of like, I mean, if you've ever done this, and I think we all have, you just can't let that final little piece of meat go on a nice steak or something like that, and you chew off the bone and you suck out the marrow and you get every little grain off of it, and when you're done, you're a mess. And it's kind of a nice mess, see? I wonder if that is, because the image here is really of a luxurious and rather a relaxing meal. Huh? So I don't think it's necessarily anointed. I think it's you make a mess out of my face, my head, with oil, and my cup, I mean, you're talking about the food and beverage service here, my cup is full up. Rawa really means saturated, can't hold another drop. 6, Ak, surely, Tov, and Chesed will radaf me. Interesting, radaf, you may remember, means pursue. All right, stalk out, chase down, even persecute in a negative setting. All right, this isn't follow along, but God sort of chases us down with Tov and Chesed. Will pursue me all, call Chaye, 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 call Yemei, Chayai, all of the days of my life, and here's the last crux here, Shavti. This is either the perfect of Shuv, and I will return in Beth Yahweh, the house of Yahweh, or it's from Yashav, in which case the Masoretes have pointed it incorrectly, but that's the way everybody takes it. They take it as the infinitive construct of Yashav, which is Shevet, with pronominal suffix Shivti, my Yashaving, my dwelling, my residing will be in Beth Yahweh for a length of days. Orek is length, Yamim is days. And maybe I should leave it at that. There's a whole, the commentaries always at least point this out and debate it. Robbie actually suggested in his SBL or JBL Deliberate Ambiguity article that this is one that maybe the Masoretes wanted you to have it both ways. Because they've really, grammatically it makes more sense for this to be from Yashav. All right, you don't have a finite verb. Shuv doesn't really mean return in something. It's awkward. It makes more sense to say my dwelling place is in the house of Yahweh. But they've pointed it as though it's the perfect of Shuv. Shavti, I will return in the house of Yahweh. And if you want to have it all of the above, then it's something like I will return and reside in the house of the Lord. But I don't know. That's a little far-fetched. We better quit. Quickie.
Yeah, the anointing that, smearing your head with greasy ashes, there's a connection with what's left over after the sacrifice.
Yeah, I want to stay away from that. I think that would really be forcing it. I don't think that this has to do with, suddenly you're talking sacrifice here, right? And I don't think that's the point. It is used that way, but not only that way. What I couldn't find, I just ran out of time. I was actually sort of trying to track this down. I'm not sure that it's used with head anywhere else. To dashan, you will dashan my head. And it's not used with head. And I don't know what to make of this at this point, except it's for further research, I guess. We better do some Greek here.